Arlen Specter is the right man for the United States Senate. I can count on this man. See, that's important.
Arlen Specter cast the deciding vote in favor of Recovery Act that has helped pull us back from the brink.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, the big news is in, the big story of the week. We are going to Tampa.
That's so exciting. Why?
Well, because the Republican Party is going to have their national nominating convention there in 2012. And it's the first time the Republicans have been in Florida for their nominating convention since
1972 and 1968.
That's right.
When they nominated and renominated Richard M. Nixon,
who was elected both times. So they're trying to get their luck back by going to Tampa.
That's right, because Nixon did so well for the Republican Party.
That's right. And, of course, you know, going to Florida is probably an appropriate thing to do, not only because it's a swing state that's really been crucial to the last several presidential elections, but also because they should be just about finishing cleaning up that oil spill by then.
And on the very day they announced that Tampa would be the choice, Charlie Crist made it official, leaving the Republican Party.
A somewhat ironic moment that he should be actually leaving the Republican Party at the moment that he succeeded, or many of the other Floridians who had been working for this goal, succeeded in luring their biggest convention there. Now, they had some other choices. They could have gone to Phoenix.
Right.
Phoenix was on the short list.
Right. And you know what? It's lovely being in Phoenix in August.
Well, especially if you're, shall we say, not carrying your proper papers. But who knows where that's going to go. Right now, the whole immigration law in Arizona controversy, which is getting them a lot of very bad press, is not unpopular with Arizonans. It's not unpopular with people nationally. Very unpopular with Hispanics,
right,
and other new immigrants. But right now, its numbers look pretty good, as the numbers looked for the Proposition 187 in California back in 1994. When that was passed, that helped them elect a Republican governor in 1994 and devastated their standing with Hispanics ever since.
Exactly.
And has hurt them.
Except for a brief respite with George W. Bush and a guy named John McCain, who once upon a time supported liberalizing immigration laws. But if you saw the last John McCain ad, you see him walking with his sheriff.
Of all the illegals in America, more than half come through Arizona.
Have we got the right plan?
Plan's perfect. You bring troops, state, county, and local law enforcement together.
And complete the dang fence.
It'll work this time. Senator, you're one of us.
Well, so we have a new folks here, John McCain.
And also Salt Lake City was among the finalists for the Republican
Convention.
Oh,
we could have been going to Salt Lake City. Well, that's not exactly spring break. But on the other hand, it is high in the mountains, and it would be probably a more pleasant place to be in August than either Tampa or Phoenix. But even as Phoenix was touchy at this moment because of the immigration law, there were reasons for some Republicans, I think, to be a little uncomfortable about Utah as well.
Well, just as Charlie Crist will probably not be attending the convention in Tampa, I suspect that Bob Bennett, the three-term Republican senator from Utah, would not have been attending a convention had it been in Salt Lake City, given what happened to him last weekend at the state convention.
Robert Bennett, three-term senator, son of a multi-term senator from the state of
Wallace
Utah,
Bennett,
was not only denied renomination by his state convention, but they preferred two other candidates to him at their state convention, thereby leaving him under 40% of what he finished third. He was down in the 20s.
He couldn't even make it to the primary.
So he doesn't get to be on the ballot.
He has not ruled out running as a write-in candidate in November against whomever the Republicans pick in the June primary, and the Democrat, no Democrat has won since 1970. But the only time in history a U.S. senator was elected to the Senate on a write-in was Strom Thurmond in 1954. And what's even more interesting, and I think Bob Bennett alluded to that this week, had Orrin Hatch, the senior senator from Utah, been running for re-election.
And a true institution.
As he should be. But he also would not have survived the state convention there, because just as the conservatives railed against Bob Bennett for all the earmarks and his TARP vote in late 2008, Orrin Hatch...
He was an appropriations guy, so he had to be doing spending. And also, he voted for TARP when it meant saving the banking system from collapsing and taking the world economy down.
But again, that's a vote that many other Republicans took in 2008, along with Orrin Hatch, who
urged by their president, George W. Bush, and his entire cabinet and his entire economic team.
And so there's obviously an anti-earmark, anti-politics as usual feeling in much of the country, but especially in Utah, we saw the Republicans. Bob Bennett out after three terms. Orrin Hatch probably would not have survived as well. He's not up until 2012, and it's something to watch. And now the Republican nomination will be decided in the June primary between Tim Bridgewater and Mike Lee, big household names.
Yeah, I just really can't choose between the two.
I always thought Mike Lee was an adverb.
After all that they have meant to the national political scene and to the Utah political scene, I really can't choose between them. Let me just say, Robert Bennett was on our air this week talking to Michelle Norris, and he said that one of the things people expressed outrage to him about was that he had not stopped Obamacare.
You let Obama pass that plan. And that's because you're part of that Washington apparatus and you're part of that old boys club where everybody gets along. You didn't stand there and fight. If you had really fought, you could have killed Obamacare. And I say, well, the reality is that I couldn't. We had to have 41 votes. We had only 40. And you try to, no, they won't buy that.
That was fascinating to listen to. But it was also the fact that he wasn't a screamer, a yeller, somebody who would get on Fox News and rail against Obama socialism and things like that, which is what the rank-and-file Republicans seem to want. Jason Chaffetz, the freshman congressman from Utah, who is actually rumored to be challenging Orrin Hatch in 2012.
Why not?
He's the new face of the Republican Party in Utah, young, energetic, and angry.
And spending his own money and also running against immigration.
Which actually elected him to Congress against Chris Cannon. But my point is that Bob Bennett was not the angry type, and that's the kind that they were looking for. Bob Bennett was just too placid for them, and I think they wanted more anger.
And they will probably get more anger from whomever they get in their replacement decision here later this year. But this is, of course, as we've been observing, a bipartisan, nonpartisan, metapartisan kind of anger that's out there. It really goes beyond the usual party vessels. Look what happened in West Virginia. In the same time frame, practically, this week, we had Alan Mulahan, 28-year veteran of Congress, also someone who had taken his father's seat in Congress.
Robert Mulahan.
And he was dismissed by the voters by a double-digit margin.
56-44, right.
To a state legislator who was more conservative and who came along and said, it's time to get rid of these guys who vote for Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker and who call themselves Democrats but aren't really serving the people, and successfully knocked off a guy I think most people going into the year thought was not in any trouble.
Well, the thing is, there's always been ethics questions hanging over Alan Mulahan. He has steered earmarks to businesses run by his friends, but that issue has been around since 2006, and the Republicans thought they had a great issue against him in the 2006 elections, and Mulahan won big. In 2008, he ran unopposed for re-election. But you know what was also significant was Alan Mulahan's vote on behalf of health care. The National Right to Life Committee, which has always backed Mulahan, Mulahan is a pro-life Democrat, broke with Mulahan because of the health care vote, and basically was on the issue of abortion. They supported Oliverio, the state senator, who ran from the right with Tea Party support, and this is a Democrat,
That's interesting, right.
Because of the health care vote.
In a sense, he was one more guy who died for Bart Stupak's sins, or Bart Stupak's decision to prioritize voting for health care over the right to life issue.
So if you have two big victories by the Tea Party in the past couple of weeks, one, forcing Charlie Crist out of the Republican Party, two, the defeat of Bob Bennett in Utah, now they're looking for number three in Kentucky in Tuesday's primary with Rand Paul running against the establishment candidate. Of course,
Trey Grayson.
And the establishment meaning Mitch McConnell.
Right. So Mitch McConnell handpicked Trey Grayson, essentially, said, Trey, I want you to run. I want you to kind of muscle Jim Bunning out of there. We're tired of having
Mitch
Bunning
is actually,
as
Mitch
our
is the guy
junior.
Who muscled him out.
That's right. And, well, he needed a horse to enter in the race, and Trey Grayson was willing to be the lucky horse to be basically shown a clear path into the United States Senate. But it hasn't worked out that way. Every poll I looked at this morning, Rand Paul is running double digits ahead.
Right. By the way, in French, Trey Grayson means very Grayson.
And in Boer, Rand Paul means we'll take it all back. Thank you.
Speaking of Boer, I think we should pick this up a little bit because the people are listening to this podcast. But just like with the establishment falling behind in Kentucky, the Democratic establishment in Pennsylvania is getting hit with Arlen Specter in serious trouble.
Now, well, this isn't great irony, though, of course, as we heard at the top of the podcast. This is the Arlen Specter who has been weighed down by the endorsement of the last two presidents of the United States.
Of different parties.
First in the Republican Party and now in the Democratic Party.
He left the Republican Party because he could not win a primary, so he became a Democrat, and now he may not win the Democratic primary.
I think he probably always knew that there was a chance the Democrats would not accept his party switch after 30 years in the Senate as a Republican, and he always knew that if a strong Democrat were to challenge him, he'd be in trouble. But he wasn't really worried about Joe Sestak until recent weeks, when he suddenly decided Sestak was creeping up a little bit too much, and he ran a very tough ad attacking Sestak for not releasing his records from the Navy. And Joe Sestak is a retired admiral. And this was widely perceived as being over the top, and a bit of a blowback came back, and suddenly Specter's numbers started dropping rapidly.
And Specter was not helped by the nomination of Elena Kagan to the Supreme Court, because Specter, although while then a Republican, voted against her for Solicitor General, meaning he's the only Democrat in the Senate right now who voted against her. And that, along with Anita Hill, the grilling
it
of Anita
Hill. It
brings
back all the videos.
And voting for Roberts and Alito, which Arlen Specter did, it reminds Democrats saying, wait a second, this guy, you know, even though the right wing, the conservatives say that he's always been a rhino, he's not been a real Republican, the left wing says, well, he still did Santorum and Bush's bidding on so many issues.
Many issues. He helped Santorum get reelected when Santorum had a tough one once. Of course,
and Santorum helped him in 2004.
That's right. One hand washed the other there for a long time. Also, I think there's just a sense of Arlen Specter having twirled maybe a few times too many, that he's just turned coat too many times. And that in this particular instance, because it's a Supreme Court nomination, because it's a woman, because he's opposed her before, he doesn't look like a guy who women would want to vote for, particularly not Democratic women. And we're going to see all that videotape again and again through the last few days of the campaign.
And what I thought was very remarkable this week is that NARAL endorsed Sestak, and given all the years that Arlen Specter had supported choice, to the dismay of conservatives in the state and conservative Republicans in the state, Arlen Specter was always a pro-choice Republican, and yet NARAL endorses Sestak this week. Ron Elving, I ask you, with a couple of days to go before Tuesday's primary, who wins?
It appears that all of the momentum in the last several weeks has been with Sestak. He's come from way down in the polls to being even or even slightly ahead in a couple of polls. They're mixed at this point. I would say if the election were being held today, Sestak has the wind in his sails. It's a long weekend, though, to Tuesday. We know that Specter has stockpiled a lot of money and a lot of ad time for the last weekend. He's going to hit Sestak again. He's going to show a lot of pictures of himself with Barack Obama. I think, though, in the end, his Achilles heel may be that he is not as strong as he needs to be in the African-American community in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is where he's going to have to win it. I think in the end, it's probably too close to call, but if I had a bet, I'd bet on Sestak.
I do, too. I think Sestak does win, and I think we overstate the importance of an Obama endorsement, as we saw with the Massachusetts, with Martha Coakley.
Well, especially a winking, nudging kind of endorsement. I mean, this is Barack Obama fulfilling the promise that was obviously made to Specter when he provided the 60th vote for health care back a year ago, or when he became a Democrat in 2009 and eventually provided the 60th. Vote for health care.
What about a prediction in the other state, the big state primary in Arkansas?
I think in Arkansas, Bill Halter started too late. Now, in the same sense that we've got a real consensus of the polls in Kentucky favoring Rand Paul, there seems to still be a consensus in Arkansas that Bill Halter has not overtaken Blanche Lambert Lincoln. This is not to say she will be reelected in November. Her numbers for November against the Republican, probably John Boozman, are terrible. She may be the single most vulnerable Democrat on the whole map.
Most vulnerable incumbent senator of either party.
Of either party.
Right.
But it does not look as though Bill Halter has made the sale yet in Arkansas to bump her from the Democratic nomination.
Now, here's the PS to all this. There's a third candidate in the race, a businessman by the name of D.C. Morrison, who's polling between 8 and 10% in the primary.
Which is about how popular D.C. is anywhere in the country.
Right. But if he forces the two leading Democrats, Lincoln and Douglas, Lincoln and Halter, to a June 8th primary, it gives Halter more time.
That's
it gives
right.
Labor, the MoveOn.org people, more time to make the case against Lincoln.
That's right. And if he can force that runoff, then I think it's an even bet.
One thing I want to mention before we leave Tuesday's, there's a special election in Pennsylvania's 12th congressional district. If you remember John Murtha, when he was first elected in 1974, it was a referendum on Richard Nixon, on the Republican
it was
Party.
It was
on
Watergate.
Watergate, right. Yeah. And that election in a historically Republican district sends a message to the Republicans that they were in big trouble, and they were. 36 years later, now the Republicans would like to reverse that. Tim Burns is a businessman, first-time candidate running in the special election for Murtha's seat.
And running pretty much even, is he not? I mean, people have been noting that while this has been a Democratic district under John Murtha, it did vote for John McCain. It did vote narrowly for John Kerry.
It's the only district in the country that went from Kerry to McCain from 2004 to 2008.
And John Murtha had an explanation for that. He didn't think the people in his district were ready for a black president. But now we're asking them yet another question. It's not the presidential question. It's not the John Murtha, do you love him or hate him question. It's the what kind of representation do you want going forward? Mike Kritz, who is the Democratic nominee,
longtime Murtha aide,
is the face to some degree of the pork delivery. He's the guy who showed up and brought the bacon when John Murtha made it happen for his district back home. John Murtha died suddenly earlier this year. Kritz functions as a kind of successor because he was a staff member, because he was involved so closely with Murtha's relationship with the district. And so in a way, he walks as the
inheritor. He embodies John Murtha, absolutely.
So in that sense, they're making a choice between what John Murtha represented to them, the sort of democratic machinery of that part of the world, versus this new, shall we say, unknown, but Republican alternative that has more of the Tea Party sort of spirit.
Yes, but all the money and the earmarks and the programs and the things that John Murtha brought to the district, we don't expect Kritz to be that powerful at all. I mean, he may have Murtha's face in all the ads, but he certainly doesn't have the power or the connections, and certainly not the seniority that Murtha had to help the Johnstown area.
All right, you brought up Elena Kagan, and she is certainly the name of the moment in Washington this week. She is walking around meeting each of the individual senators, starting with the Republican leader, the Democratic leader, and sitting down with each one, and for the cameras,
right,
clickety, 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 each time she sits down there. What are those conversations worth? How much does that have to do with whether or not she's going to get confirmed?
Well, what's so funny about this is that the reason Arlen Specter said for voting against Kagan for Solicitor General was she wasn't forthcoming enough during the interviews and during the confirmation hearings. Now, this week, Arlen Specter says, you know something? She seems to be more open and more...
She's developed a forthcomingness
right, right,
that previously I had not experienced, yes. Well, what about some of the other 99 senators? What do you make the vote at right now?
Well, if one of them should happen to fall, then there's only 98 senators.
I understand. And what would you guess right now would be the vote if the confirmation were to be held this afternoon?
Well, when they voted for a Solicitor General, 31 Republicans voted against her.
And 7 voted for her.
And the 7 were like people like Tom Coburn, John Kyle, Orrin
They were
Hatch.
A strange group. Jed Gregg, usually thought of as a pretty conservative guy. And then the others were relatively moderate. Dick Lugar, Olympia Snowe, and Susan Collins.
I think there were 31 votes against Sotomayor, and there were...
I think it was the same 31.
Yeah, and so I suspect that I don't think the Republicans will put any kind of effort to defeat Kagan. I think
no filibuster.
So for all the arguments that the Republicans or conservatives are making against the Kagan nomination, she is not the fire-breathing liberal that he could have picked,
That's
which
right.
would have tied the Senate in knots.
That's right. Even Diane Wood would have been much more controversial
Absolutely.
Because she has opinions that she has written on partial birth abortion and things of that nature, which would have been flashpoints. So in a sense, she is not the safest nominee. She's not the one the Republicans were asking for. That was Merrick Garland. I think we'll see him later when there are more Republicans in the Senate. Not the most controversial, but a clear liberal fighter and somebody who will be, in the mind of Barack Obama at least, an effective counterweight to the John Roberts, Samuel Alito, Antonin Scalia block on the court.
Well, while we may expect her to be a liberal fighter, the fact that she's been very careful about her political philosophy
in order to get to where she is
in her whole career. So I kind of think for all the Republican arguments saying, well, she doesn't have judicial experience, one, they didn't use that argument when Harriet Myers was nominated by President Bush.
Or when William Rehnquist was
William Rehnquist,
nominated.
Lewis Powell.
He had never
right?
been a judge. 40.
And who was that hot dog on the court years ago? Oh, yeah, Felix Frankfurter.
Yes,
he
yes.
He was not a judge before that.
Well, let's just tell the listener that we believe that the hearings for the confirmation of Elena Kagan to the United States Supreme Court will begin on June 28th, the last Monday in June, which is approximately the same time we expect the Supreme Court to be wrapping up this year's session. And it will be interesting to see whether in the 6 weeks odd that we have between now and then, big issues develop that make it more problematic for this nominee of Barack Obama, or whether by then it is assumed to be a done deal.
But you know, it's interesting also, for all the things that have been happening this year, the changes, the health care vote, the botched terrorism attack in Times Square, nothing seems to have changed. Obama's numbers seem to have been staying the same.
I was just noticing this morning that the generic congressional preference number is 4240, and I don't even care which one is 42.
Right.
I mean, it's that close. With the country's ox in a ditch to the degree that it is perceived to be economically, the jobs number is terrible. Even though there are some healthy economic signs, most people aren't feeling it. Home foreclosures are still terrible. Even in this atmosphere of unhappiness, unrest, dissatisfaction with the economy, we don't see a huge tidal wave of anti-democratic feeling. It's more like anti-incumbent, anti-situation feeling.
But of course, if you're anti-incumbent and the Democrats are running the show, you suspect the Democrats will suffer
the brunt. They should.
Certainly,
they absolutely
they
should. They are the party in power. But there is a chance that the anger that is felt towards Washington will not all fall on the Democrats.
And that's why I think Tuesday's primaries are so significant, because as the Democrats are taking a pounding in Arkansas, beating each other up between Halter and Lincoln, in Pennsylvania between Specter and Sestak, the Republicans are doing the same in Kentucky with Grayson and Paul. So, as you say, both parties are in some difficulty in having internecine warfare between the establishment and the outsiders.
And I'm so glad to say that internecine warfare has not yet broken out here in this week's political podcast.
Yes, it does, stupid idiot.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for internecine warfare on It's All Politics from NPR.
To me. Ah!